Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sports Tonight on BSL Radio. Join Rob Shields and Mike Weber as they talk about the Baltimore Orioles, Baltimore Ravens, University of Maryland Terrapins, and more. Be part of the show. Call us at 347-215-8391.
Welcome to Sports Tonight with Rob and Mike. I'm Mike Weber, joined by Rob Shields. As usual tonight, we will try but fail to be cooler than the other side of the pillow. That, of course, reference to Stuart Scott. RIP to Stuart Scott. Very sad there. Rob, how you doing tonight?
Not too bad, man. How about yourself?
Not bad at all. So tonight, focusing on the NFL, specifically the Baltimore Ravens, we will be joined by Sid Seraph from Fox Sports and then Garrett Downing from BaltimoreRavens.com. So get into a lot of good Ravens talk and just general NFL talk with those guys. So, you know, tomorrow, actually, by the way, before we get into the football, we'll have a Hall of Fame show. Get our baseball nerd on with this Hall of Fame election coming up here that we just had, actually. Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, Craig Biggio, and John Smoltz all elected to the Hall of Fame. So congrats to those guys. We'll get into that tomorrow. All right, so Ravens, big win in Pittsburgh, 30-17. They move on to go to Foxborough, play the Patriots. Huge win, obviously. It's great anytime you advance in the playoffs, but then especially beating your arch rival makes it even sweeter. So, Rob, what were your thoughts on that game?
You know, it was as well-played game as they've had all year across the board, and especially when you consider the opponent. I mean, you know, they played really well against Tampa, but so did most teams. I thought that the defensive game plan was perfect. Now, obviously, any game plan can be good if you're getting your front four is getting pressure, which the Ravens were, and they didn't really have to do much blitzing, which is good because Roethlisberger was rated the best quarterback in the league this year against the blitz. So when your front four gets pressure, that makes any defensive coordinator look smarter. I don't care who they are. So that was huge, but you know, it seemed to me that was the game plan, was to keep using those guys, get pressure on Ben, and then drop a lot of guys back. The Ravens secondary, you know, they had the one play to Antonio Brown that was, you know, where he got down at the half-yard line, and for some reason you have Darryl Smith covering him in the slot, which was, you know, pretty ridiculous. So other than that, though, and that wasn't necessarily behind the secondary as much as behind a linebacker, but other than that, the Ravens did a really good job of keeping everything in front of them, which is the exact thing I would expect them to try to do this weekend, too. And, you know, Pittsburgh was able to move the ball, but the Ravens kept them out of the end zone, which was another huge thing. And, you know, I think if you had asked Dean Pease and Harbaugh to give you what they would consider a perfect scenario, I think what played out would have been that scenario defensively. And offensively, Flacco played very well. They didn't run the ball that much or that well. They did the first scoring drive, but after that they didn't really run the ball all that much. They didn't commit to it as much as I thought they would, but part of that was because Flacco was doing a good job throwing the ball. And then also, the Steelers had a big advantage in time of possession, so they ran a lot more plays and all because they were eating up the clock, getting those first downs and getting down the field. But a lot of that was in the first half. The second half, the Ravens controlled the clock a lot more than they did in the first half. So, you know, I think, you know, there's some things offensively, you know, they need to pick up third downs a little bit better defensively, that, you know, it'd be nice to see them get off the field a little more often on third down than they did the other day. But defensively, it was pretty much a perfect game. Special teams, it was pretty close to a perfect game. and then offensively, they did the things that they needed to do to put points on the board. So, you know, I didn't think that this was some game where they had no chance, and, you know, like Bill Simmons apparently said, and, you know, even a lot of Ravens fans were really not giving them much of a chance, which I thought was kind of ridiculous, even though I did think Pittsburgh would win. But I thought it was I was picking Pittsburgh because they were playing better and they were at home. not because I thought that they were a better team. So, but people were acting like it was just some team that the Ravens just had no chance to beat, which I thought was a little out there. So, I wasn't overly surprised by the outcome whatsoever. I think the only thing that I would be surprised about if I were to pick anything is really how well the secondary played overall.
Yeah, and as far as Bill Simmons, I don't think he said they had no chance, but, I mean, I think it was pretty much, you know, that was the game he was most confident in. And, you know, a lot of people seem to be pretty confident about the Steelers in this one. But Steelers-Ravens play, I mean, I don't see huge reason to be, like, ridiculously confident, regardless of this year or any other year in recent history, because, you know, it's such a huge rivalry game that it could swing either way with just a play here or a play there. This game, you know, Ravens won, you know, relatively convincingly. So, very strong effort, of course. I would say in terms of the secondary, there was one play that Ben Roethlisberger basically, I think, screwed up that should have been a Steelers touchdown, and he hung the ball up there way too much on, I believe it was to Bryant in the end zone, and Bryant caught the ball but was pushed out of bounds. So, that one, it was a really bad pass, I would say. Ben Roethlisberger, you know, had an excellent season, and he's the type of quarterback where he makes that throw, and generally people aren't going to hammer him too much because of what he's done in this league. But it should have been a touchdown. It was a lot of you know, space there to get him that ball, and if he throws it more on a line, easy touchdown. So I would just point that play out. But yeah, the Ravens defense overall, very good effort. You mentioned the ability to stop the Steelers from converting touchdowns, limiting to field goals. That was huge. So, you know, that was, I think, one of the key things in the first half of that game, that they limited them to those three field goals. And the Steelers were on the verge of field goal position another time, too, and they were able to keep them from getting into field goal position. So, excellent job there. You know, so Flacco, very good game. He did get away with one dumb pass that was thrown deep. I forget the secondary guy who dropped the interception for the Steelers. But, you know, that was just one mistake where otherwise he was excellent. So, you know, strong game overall, except the running game, as you mentioned, was not particularly good. Forsett had a 14-yard run, but other than that, 15 carries, 22 yards. And, of course, he had the fumble right after their fourth down conversion, controversial fourth down play. You want to say anything about that? I mean, ultimately, it doesn't really matter since the Ravens won, and that play, the conversion was successful, but then, you know, the Forsett fumble, and there's, you know, some complaints on the Baltimore Sports and Life message board after the fact and beforehand that you and others didn't like the decision. But I thought it was odd that there was actual complaints after the conversion and then after the fumble, like blaming Harbaugh for going for it on fourth down because Forsett, who guy who hadn't fumbled all year, like fumbles it like the next play or whatever. So any thoughts on that decision and the aftermath there?
Well, I thought it was a bad decision. I mean, now don't get me wrong. That quarterback sneak that Flacco has run a lot this year has been very, very hard to stop. I can only think of one time where he got stopped. You know, it's becoming kind of like Brady. Brady I don't know if he still does it as much. I haven't paid as much attention. But, I mean, he was doing that all the time on, like, a third or fourth and short, you know, a less than a yard type thing. And it's like nobody was stopping it. And that very similar to Flacco this year. So I can understand why they did it because they felt very confident that he was going to convert it. But and that is one of those, you know, Flacco talked after the game about how they really played aggressive offensively. And that is probably the perfect example of that. So on one hand, I like the thought process of we're going out there and we're winning. You know, let's go do this to win this game. The other side to that is you were doing a pretty good job against the Steelers defensively. It was a close game at that point, and if you don't convert that, you've just given them excellent field position. I didn't feel that the reward was outweighing the risk there. You know, the aftermath, for me personally, you know, like you said, you don't figure on Forsett fumbling. He hasn't done that this year. But it, for me personally, anything that I might have said about that was more of a frustration because I didn't feel, you know, it should have been punted. They should have had the ball at the 10-yard line or so, give or take, and, you know, and that shouldn't have been an issue. And, you know, as a Ravens fan in Pittsburgh, we always expect something to happen. You know, that gave us all flashbacks of the playoff game where they were winning big early, and then a Ray Rice fumble turned the whole game around. And, you know, it was a lot of that type of thing. But I would agree with you that you can't blame Harbaugh for the fumble. One has nothing to do with the other. I think that's just a more frustration thing. But I did not think it was the right call, though. Just too risky in that situation.
Yeah, and I wasn't like pointing at you in terms of the after reaction after the fumble. There were a few other posters that were, especially blaming Harbaugh because of that, which I thought was ridiculous. But in terms of the actual decision to go for a fourth down, I'm actually in favor of it because, in general, I think, you know, football coaches and we as fans, along with the media, are way too conservative in terms of fourth down calls because that's, you know, the way football has been played pretty much throughout history. So that's what we have come to expect. What we've been taught is, you know, the right decision to make the vast majority of the time is to punt the ball on fourth down. But you mentioned that Flacco play is very difficult to stop. So, yeah, maybe if it's a 50-50, you mentioned risk-reward, if it's a 50-50, if he gets it or not, or anything close to that, yeah, then, you know, the risk is going to be larger than the reward. But when you consider that it's a very high probability that he's going to get the first down, I'm good with it. It gives the Ravens a chance to really, you know, put the kill shot in that game. And even if they don't get it in the end zone with that drive, which obviously they did not, normally, without the fumble, you'd at least be able to take some more time off the clock, and you'd have a very good chance of getting in field goal range. So, I mean, you're probably not gaining, like, you're gaining field position, but a lot of times you end up with a touchback, and it's really not that huge of a field position reward as you would hope for. So, you know, I'm actually good with the call, but again, it didn't end up like mattering because the Ravens played so well otherwise that the fumble became basically irrelevant. And you got the turnover pretty soon after there with Suggs with, kind of a lucky interception, but still. Suggs, by the way, Suggs and Doomerville, you mentioned the pass rush earlier. Those two guys were huge in this game for the Ravens.
I don't understand, number one, why you're calling that interception lucky. That's definitely how he planned it. But, you know, the one thing, I will agree with you that I do think quite often teams are way too conservative on fourth down. I totally agree with that. The one thing that I would say about this particular play, so that play happened early in the fourth quarter. The Ravens were up 20-9. So, it's a two-possession game. So, they did that at the 12:32 mark in that game. To me, I just think that was just a little too early to do that. Because, again, if you don't get it, I mean, look at how that game played out. The Forsett fumble, and then boom, they get the immediate touchdown. Okay, now the Forsett fumble happened. If the Ravens don't get the first down, maybe the same type of thing happens. But you know, whatever. But the point is, that game went from 20-9 to 20-15 immediately, and the Ravens had to convert a 3rd-and-13. Now, to their credit, I think the 3rd-and-13 play to Owen Daniels was the biggest play of the game. Because if they don't convert that, they're punting the ball right back, and the crowd is really into that game because they've just scored a touchdown, they've just forced a 3-and-out, and they had a fumble recovery before that. So that's the thing that bothered me about that play is because, as it turned out, you got it, and then you had the fumble. But if you don't get it and something like that happens, that's something where you look back and say, you should have punted it, made him go another 30, 40 yards, and, you know, you do that. If they do that to you, fine, but you're going to eat up more clock to do that. It's obviously much more difficult to do that and that type of thing. So while I agree, I agree that people are usually way too conservative on fourth down. I just think there are certain situations where, you know, the old saying where any possession that ends in a kick is a good one, and that's the possession that I felt should have ended in a kick. And had that happened, you know, it would have been obviously that much more difficult for Pittsburgh to come back. So. Generally speaking, I agree with you. I just not on that particular in that particular situation.
Well, that old saying probably goes back to a time where points were more scarce and turnovers were more plentiful. I'm guessing. I don't know, because I wouldn't say that that's true today. I mean, it depends on the score and situation, obviously, but generally, I wouldn't call a punt a successful drive. You know, maybe. I mean, obviously, there's circumstances, but. Fourth and one at the opposing 49, I'm going for that vast majority of situations, vast majority of time. You say it's too early. I would do that in the first quarter. That's a situation where you're going to get it. It's depending on your team and your opponent. But if you have a situation like the Ravens against the Steelers, not exactly the most stout defense in the world either. And you have a chance where you're going to get that first down, I don't know, I think 80% is conservative, I think, in that situation with the Ravens and Flacco so great at that sneak. I'm going for that basically in almost any situation. So, I mean, it's just a matter of philosophy. I mean, I appreciate that you're more aggressive than what most people would say. And we'll get into the other playoff games a little bit later. But the Cowboys, a big reason why they won that game is because they were aggressive in fourth down. And the Lions were not aggressive on fourth down. They did not go for it in a situation where they should have gone for it. And that very well may have been the difference. But you're right in terms of if the Ravens go for it and they don't get it, or if the Cowboys go for it and don't get it, whatever, then it becomes this huge thing of like, oh, that's why let's regret this. That's why they lost. I think the reaction when a team goes for it on fourth down and does not get it is way, way overblown compared to if they go for it and get it. You don't have nearly as strong of a reaction from people typically, from my experience. It's just like, oh, okay, ho-hum. But then, like, if anytime it fails, it's like, oh, that coach screwed it up, and it's like this huge story.
Well, I would say a couple things. Number one, one of the reasons, too, one thing you have to pay attention, especially if you're going to run the sneak, is how has the inside of the line been playing? Zutaw was thrown around in that game a lot. So to do a sneak up the middle against with the guy in front of you being somebody who was kind of thrown around a little bit, that makes it a little bit riskier. Second thing, though, this wasn't even actually a yard. This was it was maybe a half a yard. So
yeah.
That makes the chances even better that you're going to get it, obviously. You know, we're not talking – it was not a full yard. So that's the one thing that I would say. If it's a full yard, maybe the Ravens don't do it. But because, I mean, they might – I don't even know if they even had to go a half a yard. They might only had to go 6 to 8 inches or something. So, I mean, the way, you know, the way they put the lines on the TV, it's not exact. But, I mean, that's the way it looked. I mean, they were almost on top of each other. So that, you know, that does have to come into play when you're thinking about this. And the one thing – the other thing is – when you're talking about, like, how people react if you get a fourth down or you don't get it, I think a lot of times the reaction is off of the play call, too. The Ravens, in that instance, called the right play. But if you hand that ball off, like so many teams do, now you have your running back. He actually has to go, like, 5 yards to get that half a yard. And that's the type of thing that drives people crazy, I think, too.
Yeah, that's fair. And it's, in terms of the center, Zutaw, you know, getting blown up at times, I think generally that was more on blitzes from Pittsburgh, which, I mean, they had a lot of success the previous game, just blitzing up the middle. I don't know that it was necessarily as much just, you know, typical man-on-man blocking. But yeah, that's fair. All right, so with all that said, let's welcome Sid Seraph from FoxSports.com to the show. Nice friend of the show. He's been on multiple times. How are you doing tonight, Sid?
What's going on, dudes? Good to be back.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, as always. So, Sid, we were just talking about the Ravens-Steelers game. What were your thoughts there on the Ravens' convincing victory?
I can't say that I was surprised. I actually expected the Ravens to come out and play strong. They always do in the playoffs. They seem to have that sort of gear that they can kind of – it's a cliche when people say this, and I don't really like it, but at the same time, it's true in the Ravens' case. When all they have to do is just get into the dance, and they have a way of being able to play in an unflappable manner, and I didn't think that they were going to be impressed by going on the road against Pittsburgh, a team, of course, that they know very well. And the Steelers, you know, were obviously hobbled a little bit. They didn't have Le'Veon Bell. I was not surprised by the win. I was I figured that was what happened. You know, what happened was what I thought was going to happen. I just didn't think it was going to be as convincing as it was. I thought it was going to come down to maybe the last possession. But the Ravens were clearly the better team in the second half, and I just think that they deserved to win, and they did that.
Sid, before the game started, everybody was talking about the Le'Veon Bell injury, but the Ravens had, you know, their two starting tackles out, and they had to take their all-pro guard and move him to right tackle. Which, going into that game, did you feel that the Ravens' offensive line issues, especially because they had to start an undrafted rookie, which was the first time that's happened in playoff history, which is crazy to me. But did you feel that people were kind of downplaying too much the Ravens' offensive line issues and talking and just making it seem it's all about Le'Veon Bell in that situation?
Well, what I thought was funny was about the fact that the Ravens are actually pretty good against the run. So, I mean, they're really good against the run. They're not that great against the pass. So not having Le'Veon Bell in the lineup, I don't know necessarily if that was necessarily going to tip the scales one way or the other. And, yeah, like you said, the Ravens have all kinds of issues. I mean, they have almost a secondary that's basically made up of practice squad players and free agent cast-offs. And like you said, their offensive line is a mess. So, yeah, people I think tended to gloss over that, you know, because Le'Veon Bell's a, you know, skilled position guy and, you know, the big – you know, one of those, everyone loves their fantasy stats. So, yeah, so I think everyone made a bigger deal about that than I think was necessary.
Yeah, I thought the biggest thing for the Steelers about Bell being out would be pass protection more than the running game. So the Ravens, one of the issues with the Ravens over the years has been an inconsistency with this team on the road. That's both for the team and for Flacco. But then for some reason, when they get into the playoffs, Flacco turns into the best quarterback in the league on the road. So why do you think there's a difference in his play from the regular season on the road versus what he's done in the playoffs on the road?
I have no idea. I really don't, because it's like it's the same game. And it just, there are just certain people that are able to, when the stage gets bigger, when the lights get brighter, don't seem to change their demeanor. They're the same person, whether or not they go out. And I think that's usually what, you know, snake bites a lot of quarterbacks and a lot of other teams, is that they sort of tend to shrink on that big stage. And the Ravens are just the same type of team that really comes out and plays the exact same way every single time, and are not, you know, they're not someone that, you know, that can get, you can't get under their skin or get into their heads very much. And, you know, and especially when it comes to, like, New England, the Ravens are one broken up pass away from beating them three straight times in New England. So they're not impressed with the Patriots. They're just able to – and I think it really does start with, you know, Joe Flacco gets a lot of grief for having that – everyone says, like, he has no personality or something like that. He's, like, a real bland guy. But I think that really helps in times like this. You know, you want someone who's slow and steady, and is not going to get too excited, is not going to get too low, is just going to be like, hey, well, whatever, let's go out and keep doing the same thing over and over again. And if you can do that in the playoffs in a, you know, and play mistake-free, which is what Flacco has been able to do – that really just – that will – that's like 80% of the battle right there.
All right, Sid. So speaking of the Patriots, what are your thoughts on that game, and what do you think the Ravens have to do to win?
Pass rush. I mean, with that secondary that they have back there right now, I mean, they've done an outstanding job, don't get me wrong, but what you don't want to do is you don't want to have those guys on an island and then have no pass rush and just let Tom Brady stand back there and just start picking people off, you know, picking his receivers wherever he wants to. And it's going to be a huge thing on Suggs, and it's going to be a huge thing on Doomerville. They've got to find a way to get pressure with four guys. And I think they're capable of doing that. But that's what they have to do. And Brady, as great as he is, I mean, he's like any other quarterback. You get in his face, you knock him down a few times, he's not going to die.
Sid, what are your thoughts on – for the Ravens, obviously, to get that pass rush, you know, especially without blitzing, which, you know, they would love to get the front four pressure like the Giants were able to do in the Super Bowls against Brady and all. What are your thoughts on the New England offensive line and their ability to stop that?
Well, they've had a couple of injuries. They're a little banged up right now. So I think is the one who may not play on Sunday, if I'm mistaken. I can't remember. But they've had some injuries on the offensive line. And that's the one thing that's the one overlooked part about the Patriots over the years has been their offensive line. And I think that's really where this offense and where this team has really built their foundation of success on is the fact that they're able to protect, you know, amongst the best in the league at that position group. And that's where the success has come from, is where they've been able to keep Tom Brady on his feet, where he doesn't have to worry about, you know, certain quarterbacks, you just feel so sorry for them. They get the ball in their hands, and then you can't even count two, and they've got someone in their face, and they're running for their lives. And that's something they've done really well. And if the Patriots have some problems up front, they had some problems earlier this season when they were trying to figure out the right combination, but now they seem to have locked that down. But if they've got some injury problems and they've got some guys who are a step slow, that could be an issue.
Now, the Ravens secondary has actually, I can't remember if it was Football Outsiders or Pro Football Focus, they, with their advanced stats, actually showed that the Ravens were one of the better teams in the league secondary-wise in terms of keeping the receivers in front of them, which has been their thought process and how they've played Brady, because they haven't been worrying about the deep threat. So do the Ravens have a bigger – should they have a bigger worry of a deep threat for this game than they've had to worry about in the last several years?
I don't think so. I think, if you look at the Patriots' offense, they're not, I don't know the exact stats, but they're not really huge as far as big plays going. They'll chew up big chunks of yards, 15, 16 amount at a time. But I think the big guy that you really have to worry about is Gronk.
Yeah, that's my next question. So when the Ravens played the Saints earlier this year, they put Will Hill on Jimmy Graham. Now, Jimmy Graham did have two touchdowns in that game, but they were both short touchdowns, and he didn't really do too much else. And Will Hill did a very good job against him one-on-one. Do you expect them to kind of bracket Gronk all game with Will Hill, and then maybe, whether it's Mosley or Daryl Smith or whoever at linebacker in front of him? Is that what you would expect and how you think they should play him?
They gotta hit him. When he gets off that line of scrimmage, they've got to put a body on him. I mean, I don't need just, play patty cake with him. I mean, they got to lower a shoulder and do something, whatever, read him a story, spit in his ear, do whatever they got to do. Get him off his timing, because if you just let him go wherever he wants to go, you're dead. He's too big. He's too strong. And if he gets out of the open field, he's surprisingly fast. And if you let him get where he wants to go, it's over, because he can overpower pretty much. He's such a matchup nightmare. It just seems like when he's on, doesn't he seem to, grow in the middle of a game? Like, it seems like he's getting bigger and bigger as the game goes along. So you got to hit him at first. It's not so much trying to find someone who can match up with him, because he's a matchup nightmare. You can't do it. You just got to be able to knock him off his timing.
All right, Sid, so let's move on to the rest of the NFL playoffs. So, obviously, anything can happen in an NFL game. But do you give Carolina much of a realistic shot here in Seattle?
Yeah, I've been arguing with some people about that. I don't think that they have much of a shot. But I've got, other people in this office are like, I don't know. I think they can give them a good game. I actually thought the Lions were a much worse matchup for Seattle than, not just based on the record. I'm saying whether it's, style of play. I mean, the one thing that the Panthers have going for them, and this has happened, we've seen it happen with the Ravens the last time they won a Super Bowl, is they're hot right now. They're a little bit on, and that's what you don't want to catch a team when they're on a roll. And the Panthers have won four or five games. Suddenly that front four is playing really, really well. Those linebackers are playing well. Whatever, issues they had in the secondary, somehow they've been able to fix it. Their running game is doing well. My only issue is that if Cam Newton throws the ball on Saturday the way he threw it on this past week against the Cardinals, he's going to get picked apart. That's the one thing. He's not going to be able to throw on this team very well. He's going to have to throw accurately, and he hasn't really shown that much of a tendency to do that this season. And the Seattle is one team that's going to kill you if you don't throw accurately. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I think the Seahawks will win handily, probably by around 2 touchdowns, 17 points.
Do you think that there's I don't remember the stat off the top of my head, but there's either been very few or no teams that have won the Super Bowl have won a playoff game the next year. That doesn't really have that much relevance in my opinion, just because, you know, that's just one of those stats, is kind of probably coincidental more than anything else. But do you put anything into that with, you know, maybe the team being overconfident, or, you know, like you said, Carolina is playing well, you know, and a lot of people think maybe if you play a game last weekend as opposed to having the bye week that you're a little bit better off. So is there anything there that, you know, that you would look at as any kind of semblance of hope for Carolina?
Oh, sure, absolutely. I mean, the best hope for Carolina is just they played in the regular season this year and last year, and both games were decided by, I think, what, 4 or 5 points each time? Uh-huh. I think it was 12-7 last year. I think it was 13-9 this year. So, I mean, granted, both games were in Carolina, but, you know, if they're going to play smash-mouth football, I mean, they can do that. They can match Seattle that way. Seattle's offense isn't that dynamic. So if they're basically going to run read option, they're going to try to get Russell Wilson out into space and have him make plays and improvise. And, yeah, I mean, I think if it's going to come down to that, the Panthers can match up with them. And the one thing about – and this is about football at all levels. It's not even just the NFL. You don't have to be better than the Seahawks all season. You just have to be better than the Seahawks that day. And, you know, the Seahawks can come out. They turn the ball over. The one thing that the Seahawks have going against them, they're horrible when it comes to penalties. If they start beating themselves and they start doing that, anything can happen. So, no, yeah, it's not out of the realm of possibility that the Panthers could go in there and get a win. I mean, it's very, very unlikely in my opinion, but listen, stranger things have happened.
So let's move on to the Manning Bowl here. How much are you concerned with Peyton Manning's arm strength down the stretch? There's been a lot of talks, a lot of scouts and executives watching him saying that the arm strength looks even worse. You don't have to really respect the deep ball as much and that type of thing. Are you seeing the same thing, and do you feel that this is a really big issue for Denver both this weekend and if they advance?
Yeah, no, it's a huge concern for me. I hope that, based on how he was throwing the ball the last few weeks of the season, I was sitting there going, you know, God, this bye week that they got couldn't have come soon enough. But he just looked, some of those throws that he made in those, like this, what was that, second to last game against the Chargers? That was, some of those throws were like Tebow-esque. Like they were up, they were just quacking their way up like in a big, giant, like, loop through the air. And I'm going, what is he doing? You know, remember when he first came back from that injury? I think it was not last year, it was the year before. When he first came back from the injury, in those first 3-4 games, his arm looked really weak and he was throwing kind of, you know, a lot of duck passes in the air. Those passes looked better than the ones that we saw in the last few weeks of the season. It was that bad. So it was almost to the point where I was sitting there going, I think he's done. Like, it sucks that he has to go out this way, but I think after this season, I think he's got to hang it up. Because if he can't just get the ball to the side, go on, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, in the San Diego game, it was also warm. So it's not just the cold. But then the following week, the last week of the season, he looked a little bit better, getting the ball, you know, 25, 30 yards type thing down the field. It seems to me that the throws that he just can't make are outside the numbers. You know, those are the throws that if you're the team, you're forcing him to make those throws and trying to take away the middle of the field within, you know, a 25, you know, up to like 30 yards. But beyond that, I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of concern there with him.
No, but it seems like the Broncos, though, and I think Manning himself has sort of compensated for that by really concentrating on the running game, trying to control the clock. And I think that's what you got to do in the playoffs, especially when you're playing in a cold weather environment. He's not the guy that you want. You don't want him flinging the ball around the field 50 or 60 times in a game. That just increases the possessions. That just increases the chances of your opponent getting the ball more often. I like the way they've actually been playing it, where they've been slowing it down, going with C.J. Anderson, making, you know, just pounding the rock in between the tackles, keeping the possessions low, keeping the drives going longer and longer. And he can still throw if he has to. It's not like, you know, he's a complete disaster. But then, you know, really using play action, and that's really what they're going to have to do. And that's probably the right thing for them to do in the playoffs.
All right, Sid, so moving on to the Cowboy-Packers game. You know, Tony Romo, after that first week of the season, has been excellent. He led the comeback last week after, you know, he was struggling in the first half against the Lions. What are your thoughts on Dallas going into Green Bay, facing off against probably the best quarterback in football, I would say, with Aaron Rodgers?
Well, this is going to be unbelievable. The Cowboys were, 8-0 on the road, and the Packers were 8-0 at home. So, what's going to give? I'm gonna have to go with the Packers in this game. Just based on the fact that they are a completely different team at Lambeau, and I think that offense under those cold conditions outdoors, they're used to it. I think they're gonna, and that Dallas defense I think is running a little bit on fumes. I think they're gonna get Dallas alive. And it seemed like that offensive line got a little beaten up against the Lions on this past weekend on Sunday. So, I mean, they're going to be able to control the clock. I think Dallas is going to keep doing what they've been doing all season, which is the best way for them to play, which is pounding the rock with DeMarco, doing that type of stuff, trying to get Romo and putting out in the open, trying to test deep with Dez. I just don't think they're going to be able to keep up with the Packers.
Yeah, I ultimately agree. I think Dallas's defense is not strong enough in all likelihood to prevent the Packers from scoring a lot of points. So,
yeah.
Anyway, Sid, obviously we appreciate you coming on, as always. What do you have going on at FoxSports.com before we let you go?
We're all fired up, man. We got divisional weekend this division round this weekend. We've got all kinds of good stuff. We've got our prediction pieces. We got my mailbag coming on Friday. We've got Alex Marvez. We've got Mike Garofolo breaking news. Ross Jones breaking news. Come over to FoxSports.com/NFL. So we've got a bunch of good stuff for you.
All right, great, Sid. Thanks a lot, and have a great night.
All right, man. Take care.
You too.
All right,
so Sid Saraf, FoxSports.com. Check out their website, of course, for tons of great NFL coverage. So we'll have Garrett Downing joining us momentarily from BaltimoreRavens.com. Rob, any big takeaways there from what Sid had to say?
I totally agree with him about how to play Gronk. I don't understand how that isn't done. Forgetting Gronkowski, just overall. You know, one thing that drives me crazy sometimes about the Ravens over the years is their secondary. They give a lot of cushion off the line. Now, I understand maybe if you're not as good, you want to give a little bit, you're giving them in front of you and that type of stuff. But, you know, a receiver like, for example, like Antonio Brown, you know, off the line, if you push him, you're physical with him, it's going to be difficult for him because he's a smaller guy. Gronk is a big guy, so he's going to be able to fight you off a little bit easier, but like he said, you know, it's a rhythm thing. The Patriots offense is a timing rhythm offense, and if you throw that off even by a half of a second, that's all you need to do. So I would really like to see the Ravens do that, and I totally agree with them. The front four, you've got to get pressure on Brady with your front four. If you're able to do that and drop back, you know, seven guys into coverage and kind of zone it, that's really the way to beat New England in a lot of ways. And if they're able to do that, and, you know, he mentioned that Brady, you know, doesn't like to get hit. Well, no quarterback likes to get hit. It always affects all quarterbacks. So I think that, you know, that needs to happen. They've got to hit him. They've got to throw off the timing of Gronk. And then, you know, offensively, I do think one of the things that's being overlooked is the Patriots do have a pretty good defense this year. They were 11th in DVOA. So this is not a pushover defense like they have been in recent years. So this is a much, much better defensive team. So it's going to be interesting to see what the game plan is going to be against them and how the Ravens are going to be able to move the ball on them. I feel very strongly that the Ravens are the stronger, bigger, and more physical team in this game. But that doesn't necessarily, and they're probably the more athletic team, although I haven't watched New England enough to know that one for sure. But that doesn't mean that they're going to be able to win this game. You know, New England is going into this game, in my opinion, as the better team. But, you know, if you look at something like DVOA, there's not much of a difference there. New England's fourth, the Ravens are fifth. The Ravens are in the top 10 in all three categories across the board. And New England is the next closest that has it. They've got two in the top 10, and then they're 11th in defense. So, but I definitely agree with him on those two points about Brady and Gronk.
Yeah, and I'm actually looking at DVOA right now. They actually updated it through last week. So, yeah, Ravens still at number 5. New England's actually second in DVOA.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're and like a pretty good margin. The Seahawks, then New England, then there's a decent gap down to the Packers. So, but yeah, 11th in defense, so they do have a very respectable defense. All right, so let's welcome Garrett Downing from BaltimoreRavens.com to the show. Get into some more Ravens talk here. How you doing tonight, Garrett?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Not bad at all. So, Garrett, huge win against the rival Steelers last weekend. What were your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, I mean, that was a huge victory. I think this was the biggest win for the team, certainly since they won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. You know, first came back in the playoffs, and they got the monkey off their back that everybody was reminding them about last week because they had never beaten Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh in the playoffs. And so they got that, you know, kind of checked off the box. That's one of the few things that the Ravens haven't been able to do, especially under John Harbaugh. So it was a huge win. You know, this was a season where certainly a lot of ups and downs, issues, you know, on and off the field, as we are well documented, but the Ravens are kind of able to see through a lot of that, fight through a lot of that adversity and stay sort of on track on the football field. And, you know, I give John Harbaugh a lot of credit for that. And, you know, the guys that are sort of the leaders of the team, the names that everybody knows, Harbaugh and Joe Flacco and Marshall Yanda and Terrell Suggs, those guys. And, yeah, you know, now it's we say it every year. You get to the playoffs, strange things happen, anything can happen. And all of a sudden now the Ravens are, you know, going up on a trip to New England. It seems the script is familiar. And the Ravens have a chance to go and surprise everybody again with a win against the Patriots.
So, Garrett, as I'm sure as since you cover the team, you've noticed over the years how much the team has struggled on the road, whether it's the entire roster, Joe Flacco, or both. Why do you think they're able to play so well in the playoffs on the road when they've been so inconsistent on the road at during the regular season?
You know, I think that if they were able to, if there was a one answer to that, they probably would have answered it, you know, and it wouldn't be an issue. I think there's a lot of layers to it, you know, just in the playoffs overall, they've played well. And so I think the question is why have they played so well in the playoffs? Why has Joe Flacco in particular played so well in the playoffs? You know, a lot of people were asking him that. In that post-game locker room or that post-game media room after the game on Saturday. And the truth is, there's not really one answer, you know. He kind of admitted it. If it were that simple, you wouldn't be asking that because I would know. I think the biggest thing is that in the postseason, this is what he alluded to. You have to be aggressive, and he even said you have to go out there and play without a conscience, so to speak. You have to go out there and just play to win the game. Throw everything out there. You're not conservative, and I'm not talking just passing the ball. I'm saying conservative, and you're literally not holding anything back. The entire playbook is open. You're doing whatever you can to win the game. I think it's a mindset thing. I think that he has a mindset that, you know, he loves playing aggressive, and he's also not by any means intimidated by the stage or thrown off guard by, you know, the bright lights and the big stage. So I think all of that kind of works in unison. And then I also think there's a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you have success in the playoffs, if you have success in really any situation, you start to believe, hey, we can win this game. We can play well in the playoffs. We can go to New England and win. And then that you feed off of that. And then you go into a game feeling like you're going to win. And then usually good things end up happening if you play with confidence.
Yeah, let's move on to the lines. One of the big reasons, obviously, that the Ravens were able to win the other day was because of the way they were able to get pressure on Roethlisberger. So, what are your thoughts on the Ravens' ability to use their front four to get pressure this week against an offensive line that is perhaps a little bit better than Pittsburgh's right now?
Yeah, you know, the Ravens have been able to get pressure pretty much on everybody all year. You know. Now they've got Haloti Ngata back, and he had one sack. And I know a lot of times what the defensive tackle does doesn't necessarily get noticed, but this is a guy who, you know, is one of the best in the league at what he does. I think he made a difference last week, you know, in a lot of ways. Elvis Dumervil, when it's third down, if it's a third and long situation, you know, that's a spot where the Patriots want to avoid at all costs because there were times in last week's game where it was pretty evident, you know, what Elvis Dumervil was doing. You know, it wasn't really all that – it's not like there was trickery where they said, we don't know what he's going to do. It was pretty much line him up, rush off the left tackle, and he was still able to beat him for a couple of sacks on Ben. So the Patriots want to avoid those third and long situations at all costs if they can. And, you know, Terrell Suggs, this to me, guys, is as good as I've seen him play since he was Defensive Player of the Year in 2011. You know, and it's not just the sacks. Some people look at it and say, oh, well, his sack numbers are down. Elvis Dumervil, you know, kind of took some of those from him. That may be true, but he's affecting the game in so many ways. You know, I was even tweeting out some videos today just of the ways that he affects the game. And it's against the run. If you put a tight end to block him, that's a matchup he's going to win 9 times out of 10. So he affects the game in so many ways. You know, we saw it last week with the interception. And I would expect more of the same from Terrell Suggs. He seems to get up for these big games, especially, you know, against these quarterbacks. And he's had some history with Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger being, you know, two at the top of the list.
And speaking of the two lines, especially for the Ravens, I know it's still early in the week. Is there any thought on if Jernigan and or Monroe will be able to be available for this game this week?
Well, the hope is certainly that both of them are going to be available. We'll kind of have a better idea as we go through practice and the week of practice and get to see. But Timmy Jernigan was talking today and said he feels great, that he's hungry to get back out there. Certainly that's up to the coaches and the trainers if he's able to get back full strength. But you know, he seemed like a guy who's eager to play. And I could see him returning this week, and we'll see how he does. You know, I think it would help a lot if both those guys are able to play. That defensive line with Haloti Ngata and Timmy Jernigan, Terrell Suggs, Elvis Dumervil, I mean, that's a group that's good. That's among the best in the league. And so I think there's a chance that both of those guys play this week, and that can make a big difference. You know, I've been impressed with the way the rookies have played on the offensive line, James Hurst and John Urschel especially. And so, my guess would be that if James Hurst or if Eugene Monroe is able to play this week, then John Urschel probably stays at right guard and Yanda at right tackle as opposed to moving Hurst out to right tackle. But, you know, that's one of those things we'll have to wait and see what the Ravens end up doing there.
Yeah, I'm hoping that that's what they would do. The other thing about Jernigan is he gets a little bit more of a pass rush up the middle than some of the other guys that they have up the middle that are more run stuffers, so it would be nice if he's back for that reasoning too.
Yeah, he's definitely – Haloti Ngata can go out there and do a little bit of everything. Timmy Jernigan, he's really strong at getting after the quarterback. He's kind of a quicker guy in the middle, and he can make some of these guards and centers look silly with how quick he is in his move off the line. So, yeah, it is a little bit different. And, he may come back and play only 15 snaps, but if those snaps are on, you know, second or third down, he can get after quarterback a little bit, help out from the interior. You know, that should open some things up for the other guys as well.
All right, Garrett, so staying on the Ravens' defensive side of the ball, what do you think are the keys to containing Gronk in this one?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. You know, that's a matchup I'm sure that Dean Pease is losing sleep over this week. I think what the Ravens probably try to do is they'll probably try to do, you know, a lot of double teams. You're going to see Mosley on him a little bit, I think, in the shorter routes. And I also think a guy who's going to be critical in trying to slow down Rob Gronkowski is Will Hill, the safety. He's a big hitter. He was matched up against Jimmy Graham a lot in that game against the Saints on Monday Night Football, and he actually had a pick six in that game. So I think that Will is going to kind of bear a lot of that responsibility against Gronk, and the Ravens need him to play a good game this week.
And Garrett, I've been hearing from a lot of people so far this week, obviously it's early in the week, but talking about how this is a real bad matchup for New England, and that, you know, the Patriots probably weren't excited to see that the Ravens were able to beat the Steelers and that they would play them. So do you agree that this is not the best matchup in the world for New England? And if you're a Ravens fan, are you worried about what New England was able to do in Baltimore last year at the end of the season, or do you look at it as that was a much different team than now and you throw that away?
Well, two parts. The first part of the question, I think there is some truth to the fact that this is a matchup that, you know, the Patriots didn't love to see. The Ravens have had success against them. They're one of the few teams that have. You know, the Patriots beat everybody. You know, they beat the Ravens, like you mentioned, that game last year. But the Patriots have a really good track record of beating pretty much everybody. And so, but the Ravens are the one team that's gone in there and had success in New England in the playoffs. And so that memory is certainly fresh. And they've won two out of the three trips to New England under head coach John Harbaugh. And they should have won the third, really, if you're kind of looking at it. But at the same time, you know, that narrative is definitely something you're hearing a lot about this week, and I think there's truth to it. But the Patriots didn't get to be the number one seed by mistake. They're a really good football team. They're good on both sides of the ball. They have a future Hall of Fame quarterback and coach. So, I mean, this is a good group. And just because you won there 2 years ago with a totally different team doesn't mean that you're going to go and do it again. I think it gives them confidence, and I don't think the Ravens are intimidated to go play in Gillette Stadium like some other teams might be. But at the end of the day, that's kind of all that really it counts for. You can have that confidence, but then you got to go out there and do it, and that's what the Ravens are looking at this week.
All right, Garrett, so let me ask you this. Obviously, Joe Flacco gets a lot of credit for playing really well on the road, and he has, and just playing really well in the playoffs in general. How much credit should John Harbaugh get in general for the Ravens' playoff success under his tenure?
I think a lot. You know, a tremendous amount. I don't know what percentage or anything like that, but, you know, this is a guy who has done nothing but have success since he's been here in Baltimore. And a lot of times it kind of goes to other people. So, well, it's Ray Lewis or it's Ed Reed or, you know, maybe it's Joe Flacco or it's the coordinators or whatever. You know, but I think John Harbaugh is one of the best coaches in the NFL. He's shown that. You know, sometimes with coaches, there's kind of a couple schools of thought in the NFL. A lot of times teams try to go out and they try to find kind of the hot coordinator, offensive or defensive, somebody who's had a lot of success in that role. You know, that's certainly worked, you know, with certain people. Bill Belichick was known as a defensive guy before he became the guy that, you know, won three Super Bowls. So that's worked. That method has worked, you know, at times. But then there's also guys like John Harbaugh who weren't, you know, an offensive or a defensive coordinator, but they're just great leaders. And that's what I think that he is. Now, he was a special teams coordinator, but I think more than anything, he has the ability to kind of motivate his team, keep them on track, keep them focused, set the tone, have them play with confidence. And that's what he does. And given everything the team has gone through this year, you know, I don't think that his role and his importance can be overstated for the Ravens this season.
All right, good thoughts there, Garrett. Yeah, because a lot of criticism goes his way on Baltimore Sports and Life, at least. And, you know, I think some of it is because, you know, us as fans, we don't really see much of what he does because he's not an offensive or defensive coordinator, as you say. He's not calling the plays. And the main role he has on game day, at least that is noticeable watching TV, is in terms of, like, game management, clock management. And in that, I would say he doesn't necessarily excel in terms of, like, challenges and clock management and such. So you get that as, like, the thing you can criticize him for, but it's kind of hard to see the things he's doing well. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the thing is, he's not called the offensive plays, so you can't sit there and say, oh, man, can't believe he called a run in that situation. That should have been a pass. And like, you can't for some other coaches. You know, Gary Kubiak gets that praise or gets that criticism. Same goes for the defense. You know, it goes to DNPs, positive or negative. But I'll tell you this, guys, just from being in the building, John Harbaugh is involved, very much involved in every aspect of those game planning meetings. You know, he's meeting with his coordinators, he's meeting with his coach, his entire staff, Joe Flacco. I mean, he is very much involved in that, you know. And then, like I said earlier, more than anything, I think maybe his greatest strength is the ability to motivate the team, to keep them focused, to set the tone, to kind of be the leader. And that's really what's most important with that role. And I think that's one of the reasons that the Ravens wanted him from the get-go, is because he wasn't just an offensive mind who would say, you know, there's some guys and you hear about it, and I don't know how true it is. You just kind of base it off what you hear, what you read or whatever. A guy like Rex Ryan who says, basically, I'm going to coach the defense and, you know, I'm going to hire somebody to do the offense, even as a head coach. Again, I don't know if that's true, but those are some of the kind of things that you might read somewhere. But John Harbaugh is not like that. He's you know, heavily involved in everything. And, you know, the game management certainly can be kind of critiqued in Monday morning quarterbacks. But the main thing on that is he's going to be aggressive, really, in all situations. And I think he's done a great job this year in terms of just keeping the team focused, given everything that's happened with the Ravens.
All right, Garrett, good thoughts from you. Thanks a lot for coming on, of course. Where can you be found on Twitter, and what do you have going on at BaltimoreRavens.com?
Yeah, guys, I appreciate the time. Thanks for having me on. You know, we always have, every week, great stuff on the website. We've got some good stuff from Wire. We had John Harbaugh mic'd up during the game on Saturday, so we're going to be rolling out some clips from that over the course of the week. And then we're just having a ton of content related to the game on Saturday, previews, talking with a number of guys. So make sure you check out, you know, the website. The other thing, too, is we got a new iPad app, Ravens iPad app. So if you're iPad users, you guys got to download it. It's pretty awesome. Check it out.
All right. Sounds good, Garrett. Thanks a lot again, and have a great night.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. See you later.
Our pleasure. All right. Good thoughts from Garrett Downing. I don't know if you saw, Rob, but Kevin Van Valkenburg recently tweeted, and this is why I kind of asked Garrett Downing about John Harbaugh, is that John Harbaugh, yeah, well, I mean, again, we don't see necessarily, you know, what he's doing, obviously, during the week, but he says that, you know, he's really, really good at coaching every single position on the field, which is not common, really, among coaches, which is kind of what Garrett was saying with Rex Ryan. So, you know, just good thoughts there from Garrett. Any feedback or on what Garrett had to say?
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with you that, you know, I we don't see, and I think most, this is the case for every head coach, you don't see a lot of the inner workings and what they're doing on the day-in, day-out basis. There is something that Harbaugh, I mean, first of all, you brought up the challenges. Every coach is terrible at challenges. I don't understand it. You know, I think the league success rate is around 30% or less. And to me, that just, and part of the reason for that is because they're challenging plays that they have no chance of winning. And I don't – there obviously has to be something behind it. And, you know, a lot of it is you have to make a decision very quickly. You know, you're waiting to hear from your people upstairs because they're the ones who are telling you, okay, yeah, there's a chance or not a chance or something like that. So I think sometimes we might get on coaches a little too much because they're not seeing everything that the people upstairs are seeing. But, I mean, if I'm Harbaugh and the person upstairs is telling me, well, there's a chance that the spot is wrong, but, you know, but you should know that they don't overturn a play like that. You know, it's very rare. So, I mean, it has to be so completely obvious. And even then it sometimes doesn't happen. So, you know, things like that, you know, that drive us crazy as fans, it seems like it's a failure across the league. And, I don't know what the reasoning is. But, you know, he's obviously doing something right. I mean, you don't get to the playoffs 6 times in 7 years in the NFL if you're not doing something right. Now, if the Ravens didn't make the playoffs, if they had lost to Cleveland at the end of the year and they ended the year the way that they did, would there be some whispers about stuff? Maybe. Not necessarily that he would be getting fired, just that you maybe it wouldn't surprise me if you heard a few things coming out of the locker room that were an issue. But you know, winning cures all that. So I don't really think that there's like a whole lot as fans that we can complain about there.
Yeah, true. And I mean, you're right that we don't see what like any coach is doing during the week. But I think the distinction with John Harbaugh is that he's a rare breed, that he's not either completely responsible or at least largely responsible for either the offense or the defense like the vast majority of head coaches are. So it's harder to even pinpoint what he's doing exactly. I mean, you can talk about the special teams, but a lot of people kind of gloss over special teams anyway, which they shouldn't, especially with the Ravens, because that's been a huge part of their success during the time here. All right, so Rob, wrapping up here, I for some reason thought the show was scheduled for a little bit longer, so predictions on the Patriots-Ravens game.
I will still go with the Patriots winning. I made the comment today that, you know, I see this game as like the Patriots kind of not as I said blowing out, but you know, a double digit win or you know, in a game that's, you know, not as close as maybe the score indicates that they win by 10 or the Ravens win. I would be leaning towards New England winning this game. I think that they're, you know, they had the bye week and, you know, they're at home, so I think they're a slightly better team, but I do think it's a pretty bad matchup for them.
Yeah, I can see the Giants-Patriots type of scenario playing out here where Ravens get a ton of pressure and win primarily because of that. And then, you know, maybe they'll have some miraculous catch and then Joe Flacco will get all the credit. But that's not a shot at Joe Flacco. That's actually a shot at Eli Manning. So, I'll pick the Patriots, but I can see the Ravens winning this very easily. Just lightning round, I'll say Seattle. Green Bay and Denver, all the home teams win.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, I'm most confident in Seattle. I'm going to do my Bill Simmons and say there's almost no chance that the Panthers win, so we'll see if that holds up there. I wouldn't be shocked, you know, in the other two games if there's an upset. Well, the Colts game, I wouldn't be shocked. I would be pretty surprised about the Cowboys. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow, talk some MLB Hall of Fame. Thanks for listening, and have a good night.